to God by way of their worship. There were five different ones. There was a grain offering, a fellowship offering, a sin offering, a guilt offering, and a burnt offering. Now, four of these had something in common, and that is, with four of the sacrifices, there were the worshipers who could join in the eating of these sacrifices. One you could not, but four of them you could. Look in Leviticus chapter 5 with the grain offering. There in verse 15 of Leviticus chapter 5, it says, "The priest is to take a handful of fine flour and oil, together with all the incense on the grain offering, and burn the memorial portion on the altar as an aroma pleasing to the Lord. Aaron and his sons shall eat the rest." So with this offering, you came in, it was baked or cooked in a pan, and the meal was made into bread, and a portion of it then was devoted to God, but the rest of it was available to eat. Now look in Leviticus chapter 6 at the sin offering. Down in verse 26 of chapter 6, it says, "The priest who offers it shall eat it. It is to be eaten in a holy place, in the courtyard of the tent of meeting. This was a meat sacrifice, you know, the offering that was made of a calf or of a lamb. And again, the priests were able to share in the eating of this. There's the guilt offering in Leviticus chapter 7, down in verse 6. And it says there of the guilt offering, again, of a calf or of a lamb, "Any male in a priest's family may eat it, but it must be eaten in a holy place. It is most holy." Now, these first three offerings, the grain offering, and either the sin or the guilt offering, were to be eaten by those who were part of the priesthood. Now, back in those days, that's how they paid the preacher. The food was given there because the Levites were not allowed to own land. And as such, they could raise no animals, and they could have no flocks of their own. And so they were allowed to eat of these sacrifices that were brought in. Now, there was another sacrifice that could be shared in, not only by the priests, not only by the Levites, but also by the whole community. And that was in chapter 7, Leviticus 7. That's the fellowship offering. It could be turned into a communal meal, in fact. Look in verses 16 and 17. "If, however, this offering is the result of a vow or is a freewill offering, the sacrifice shall be eaten on the day he offers it, but anything left over may be eaten on the next day. Any meat of the sacrifice left over till the third day must be burned up." So you had 2 days to feast and to invite all your family and your friends and to invite the neighbors in, relatives, and the priests could eat of that, and so the whole community could eat of that, and so it was a great occasion. But now the burnt offering was different from any of these. Back over in the passage that was read for you at the very beginning, back in chapter 1, it talks about that burnt offering. And down in verse 7 of chapter 1, it says, "The sons of Aaron the priest are to put fire on the altar and arrange wood on the fire. Then Aaron's sons, the priests, shall arrange the pieces, including the head and the fat on the burning wood that is on the altar. He's to wash the inner parts and the legs with water, and the priest is to burn all of it on the altar." No leftovers. Priests don't get any to eat. The community doesn't get any to eat. It's offered strictly as a burnt offering. And isn't it interesting? Because in verse 9 it says it's an offering made by fire, an aroma pleasing to the Lord. You know, the smell of a burning carcass of an animal is anything but pleasant. And yet, God says, when you offer that entire animal to me, burn it up in its entirety, it's a pleasing aroma to me. Now, it's interesting, because these other sacrifices that were made, you could cook it until it was well done, or just the way you liked it, and then take it off, and the priest could share in that. If it was a fellowship offering, you know, you did that. And I can just imagine that if you were a priest in the temple and you saw someone bringing a fine heifer up there to offer, and your question would be, what kind of offering is this going to be today? And they may be a bit crestfallen if you say, well, this is going to be a burnt offering. If you say it's going to be a guilt offering, then he says, hot dog, we're having steak tonight. You know, they get to share in that. If you say it's a fellowship offering, then the whole community gets happy because we're going to have a big family gathering and we're going to share this meal together. Burnt offerings were different, though. They're defined like this: a voluntary act of worship for atonement of sin, or an expression of devotion, or a commitment and complete surrender to God. Did you know that the guilt offering and the sin offering were mandated by God? If you sinned, you had to bring those offerings. The burnt offering was a voluntary offering. If you wanted to, you could. If you didn't want to, you didn't have to. It was not compulsory, strictly voluntary, strictly free will. And I just wonder how often, we don't have any record that I'm aware of in Scripture of the percentages of these sacrifices that were offered. I just wonder how many people brought burnt offerings to God. I would expect that to be a minority offering of all the others. You didn't get a lot in return from that offering. You gave the most expensive animal you have, the best animal, the animal without any flaw, and it was burned up. Nobody got any good out of it. It was strictly a gift to God, commitment to Him. Now, having looked at this, I want you to flip over to the New Testament, to the book of Matthew, chapter 6. Now, Jesus is going to talk to His followers about their offerings to God, but He's going to be talking to them in terms of the things we do by way of service or honor to God. He's not talking about animal sacrifice here. He's going to talk about three areas that He addresses where we offer things to God. He's going to talk about our giving. Now, we just passed the plate a few moments ago, and you participated in this kind of an offering. He's going to talk about prayer. We've already offered prayers to God. We praised Him this morning in our prayers. We've asked things of Him. We've done as God's commanded in us praying for those who are in need. The third area is fasting. Now, folks, we don't do very good in this area. And I would seriously like to challenge you to investigate what God has to say about fasting and incorporate this into your spiritual disciplines. But listen to what He does say about these three areas. In Matthew chapter 6, beginning in verse 1, He first talks about giving. He says, "Be careful not to do your acts of righteousness before men to be seen by them. If you do, you will have no reward from your Father in heaven. So when you give to the needy, do not announce it with trumpets, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and on the streets, to be honored by men. I tell you the truth, they've received their reward in full. But when you give to the needy, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your giving may be in secret. Then your Father, who sees what is done in secret, will reward you." Jesus says, when you're going to do some giving, don't even let your right hand know what the left hand's doing. Well, now that's impossible. It's an exaggeration. It's a statement there meant to drive the point home. He's really saying, do your giving secretly. You know, it's refreshing, isn't it, when you see anonymous on a list of donors, people who don't want the limelight, don't want the glory. They just are doing it out of their relationship with God. He goes on to talk about prayer. And look what he says in verses 5 and 6. "And when you pray, don't be like the hypocrites, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues and on the street corners to be seen by men. I tell you the truth, they've received their reward in full. But when you pray, go into your room and close the door and pray to your Father who's unseen. Then your Father, who sees what is done in secret, will reward you." These were abuses of offering in the first century. People could, in a very ostentatious way, give their money so that they would be honored by that. Their name would be put on a plaque on the front of the building, or their name would be listed on a donor's list. I don't know how they would be honored, but they would be honored, and they sought this kind of honor. Jesus says, if you're going to be my follower, don't let that be your motive. He says, when you pray. And apparently, in the first century, they would often go into public places and pray, like this, on a street corner. Now, they may have been viewed as a holy person in the first century if they prayed in public. Today, if you went down on the street corner in downtown Springfield and stood there and prayed to God, you'd be viewed as a crazy person. We don't have the same kind of public values today that they did then, but apparently they would be honored by doing something like that. They would thought to be a very holy and pious person in the community if they would pray in public settings like this and pray aloud for everyone to hear their beautiful and flowery prayers. Jesus said, I think it's better when you just go in your room and close the door and you pray to God. Don't make it a show. Pray to God and God will hear you in secret and He will reward you. And then He talks about fasting. He says in verse 16, when you fast, don't look somber as the hypocrites do, for they disfigure their faces to show men they're fasting. I tell you the truth, they've received their reward in full. But when you fast, put oil on your head and wash your face so that it will not be obvious to men that you are fasting, but only to your Father who is unseen. And your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. Now, this is not a comprehensive list of ways that followers of Jesus can make offerings to God. These are just three ways that people in Christ's time were making offerings in a wrong way, for wrong motives. They were abusing the way they were making these offerings. Now, there are a lot of other ways that we as Christians can make offerings to God. We offered God our worship this morning. That comes up as a sweet aroma before God. In Hebrews 13:15, we're told that through Jesus, let us continually offer to God a sacrifice of praise, the fruit of lips that confess His name. And so we offer our best to God there. I suppose you could even worship God with wrong motives to be seen of men. And Jesus there would say, you need to concentrate on what you're offering to God in your heart to God. We do good deeds as Christians, acts of service in our community and among our brothers and sisters. In 2 Corinthians 9:12, it says, this service that you perform is not only supplying the needs of God's people, but is also overflowing in many expressions of thanks to God. And I suppose, again, that could be abused. If you were doing it to seek your own glory, you could go out and do all kinds of deeds and be seen of men, and you would receive the honor and the glory for these things. Now, note what Jesus says in this statement here, in these statements in chapter 6. He says that in all these areas in which we offer gifts to God, we need to concentrate on our motive. In fact, he ends all three of these areas with the same phrase. He says, then your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. Don't worry about what man sees. Worry about what God sees. Now, I am in a position here in this particular church to see things that a lot of you don't see. And I know of a lot of things that are going on that are not always apparent to everyone else. And I can tell you in all honesty that this is a giving church. It really is. And this is a praying church. And there are those who are committed to prayer. This is a worshiping church. And this is a serving church. Now, you guys, as I said before, you're not so good on fasting unless a lot of you are doing some stuff in that department that I'm not aware of. And I say that, you know, it can be slightly humorous, but I'm serious. I mean, Jesus said, when you fast, not if you fast. But there's a danger in all of these areas of service that we're involved in. And it's a twofold danger. One is the danger that Jesus addresses here in chapter 6 of Matthew. And that is that our motivation in any of our offerings to God will be a motivation that we will get praised by someone who sees us doing these good things. You know, I think it's sometimes easy to serve in a gathering of people that are all serving because we do get some pats on the back when we're serving in a group together. Our group's out in Colorado, and they're going to be doing some manual labor this week. They're going to be painting that church building, and they're going to be, if it's not too cold, they're going to be working outside, doing some cleanup outside too. And there are going to be a lot of folks out there that are saying, oh, you're doing a good job. Keep it up. And, you know, it's encouraging. When we go on campaigns to Mexico and we're building buildings down there, there's a lot of encouragement. And that's fun to work in a group together like that and to be praised in that way. And that's not, you know, hopefully the primary motive, but it makes it more fun to do it in group like that. When we have work days here at the building, that's encouraging to all be together and see a lot accomplished. When we have our angel food group that gathers out here and they get everything ready and people come that need to be fed and they supply that, it's fun to do it in a group. It's fun for the ladies sewing group that make all those beautiful blankets and all the gifts they make for our hospitals and children's homes and others. That's fun to do it all together. It's fun to work with VBS, and it's a team spirit all together, and we're working. And when you work together in good deeds and good works, and you're offering God these kinds of gifts in a group, there are a lot of folks around who'll say, good job. Oh, that's wonderful. And they'll commend you and encourage you. And that's okay. That's good to do that, as long as that's not your primary motive in doing those things. Well, that's one danger, and Jesus addresses that danger. But there is another danger that I think that is even more subtle that Jesus, at least here in this passage, does not address. And that is, what about the areas of ministry, the offerings we give to God that are not out in public? They're behind the scenes. And nobody knows about them but us. And we're all involved in some behind-the-scenes kinds of things. And we can become discouraged very quickly in these areas. We have folks that are involved in prison ministry in this church. And they write letters. And they go and visit. And they pray. And they answer questions. And they try to provide hope and encouragement through the Word to people who are incarcerated all over our nation. And that's sort of a solitary kind of a thing. You don't have a lot of people coming up and encouraging you to do that, because often only you and the prisoner and God are aware of these kinds of relationships. The same thing is true in our World Bible School classes, where we have teachers that are involved in the lives of people, especially in Africa. And that's not something that other people walk up and say, wow, that's wonderful that you're doing that, and give you a lot of encouragement. There are folks in this congregation who have volunteered to prepare food. And you'll get a phone call and someone will say, well, we need, you know, a bean casserole, or we need this, or we need that. And you'll go to the grocery store and you'll put that together and you'll bring it up here sometimes for a funeral or sometimes for someone who's sick. And sometimes people come up here and they'll just put it in the kitchen and no one's there and no one to say thank you. And they'll go home, and the recipients of that don't always even know who it is that's prepared those items. And so many of you will do that, and it's sort of a thankless kind of a ministry at times. And then there are others of you that have been asked for help, and someone will say, you know, I'm just passing through and could you help me with gas in my car, and you know, I'm out of work and need some help. And there are many of you who are very generous, and you'll help and you'll give folks money for food or for whatever, and you never hear nor see again from those people. And it's hard sometimes when your offering is away from the public view and from the temptation to do things for the wrong motivation, to be praised by men. The other end of the spectrum is over here, where you're doing things that are never seen by men. And in areas where sometimes you're taken for granted, and where you're unappreciated in what you do. Or worse of all, if you're just simply being taken by some con artist who knows you'll be generous, and that's frustrating. Well, let me share two truths with you. Number one, all that we do as Christians, while it may encourage or benefit others, has one primary audience. All that we do is for God. God sees everything you do. Our audience is not this church. It's not our elders. It's not our preachers. It's not people you know and love and respect here that you'd love to hear an encouraging word from. That's not why we're doing it. That shouldn't be. God is the one who sees. Now, there's another truth. Nothing we offer in the name of God ever goes unnoticed or unrewarded. You know, Jesus actually, in this chapter in Matthew 6, is encouraging his followers to enlist in the secret service. He said it's really better if you do things undercover. It's really better if you do things anonymously. Now, you can't be a Christian and do good deeds without some people noticing. And so Jesus elsewhere says, you know, let your light shine, and it will shine, and people will notice. But be sure you give God the glory and the credit even for that. But he says you don't have to always be seeking the light. Give in secret. Pray in secret. Fast in secret. You know those folks that brought those offerings? If they brought in a grain offering, boy, all the priests were happy. They'd say, oh, I can smell it cooking in the oven. That smells so good. You have such nice flour you brought in for your offering. Or they'd bring in that lamb, and the priests, all those on duty serving in the temple that day, they all got to share in that. And I bet they got some compliments saying, oh, that was sure good. We really appreciate your generosity. But to bring an animal in and say, I want this one to be a burnt offering, who's going to get excited about that? The priest will do it because it's his responsibility and his duty. He doesn't get anything from it. You know, even if you never get an attaboy or a thank you note or your name in the bulletin, Jesus promises us that God sees everything we do, and he will reward us for all those things we do. Even for something as seemingly insignificant as offering a cup of water in his name. That's not very big, is it? How many of you have ever gone to the sink or gone to the refrigerator to get a cup of water for a child? I mean, how many times have you done that? Well, let me tell you something. You may ask, who notices things like that? And I'll tell you, God does. God notices everything. And he knows your motive, and he knows your deed. And when you do something out of the goodness of your heart to honor God, that goes down in God's record book. And it will not go unrewarded. Let me tell you, when you do things like that, you're offering a burnt offering to God. And even when you give someone a few dollars and, like you feared, they go out and spend it on drink, or they lie to you, or they take advantage of you, or when you help someone, I know some of you have poured time and energy and money into loved ones, family members, and you've had it thrown back in your face, and you think it's all wasted, it's all for naught. No, it's not. No, it's not. If you have done that out of a loving heart in the name of God, you've not lost any of that. God has taken note of everything you've done, of every penny you've spent, of every hour, of every prayer, and God will reward you for that. You've simply offered a burnt offering to God. It's not wasted, because God sees loving, giving hearts, and he rewards loving, giving hearts. Aren't you glad that God didn't stop giving the very first time he ever got burned? Aren't you glad that God didn't stop giving when he was rejected, or when he was taken advantage of, or when he went unappreciated? I want to close with this verse, and I want to challenge you. If your giving is done in the public arena, be careful about your motive. Jesus said, don't give to be seen of men. But if your offerings have been behind the scenes, let me encourage you. God sees. Don't become discouraged just because you don't ever get the encouragement that sometimes you wish you had. I want to close with this verse. Luke chapter 6, verse 35. Jesus said, "But love your enemies. Do good to them. And lend to them without expecting to get anything back. Then your reward will be great. And you will be sons of the Most High. Because He," that's our Father, "is kind to the ungrateful and the wicked. Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful." Boy, what a challenge. What a high standard to live by. But what a blessing to live like God.